This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. You don't have to go very far from San Antonio to see what we don't want for our transportation future. Traffic jams and gridlock are major problems in cities around the state. San Antonio hasn't had it that bad until recently, and it's going to get much, much worse soon if steps aren't taken now. We're going to be talking about a transportation future this hour, but first, we've got some breaking news about Texas Senator Carlos Yudeste found guilty this afternoon of all 11 counts on his federal fraud trial. Texas Public Radio reporter Joey Palacios joins us now with more. Joey, thanks for coming in here.
Thank you.
Tell me about this guilty sentence. And so how much jail could he get?
Well, each charge is different. Some range from 10 years, some range to 20 years. When the charges first came out last year, it was added up that he could have up to 200 years in prison. But that depends if the judge wants to have them served consecutively. I mean, he's facing 11 charges. And if I remember correctly, the money laundering charges are 10 years in prison. And there's wire fraud, and that could be 20 years in prison. So it's really going to depend on the judge on what he decides to do. But sentencing isn't actually scheduled until June 25th later this year.
June 25th. And so and he's out while pending sentence.
He is out. And part of the reasoning behind that is Yudeste is indicted in another case. And this revolves around the Reeves County case. He received some separate indictments in that, and he's not going to face that trial until May.
Now, with Senator Yudeste, what was it like when the verdict was read?
Well, it was very sudden. Myself and several other reporters were waiting for the verdict to come in, and the court security came out and said that a verdict had been made, and they were calling people back into the courtroom. And the jury came in, and they handed their verdict over to the judge, and it was very quiet. It was very quiet in the courtroom. And the court reporter read off each count one at a time, and every count was guilty for both Yudeste and Gary Kane, the co-defendant in the case, who was a consultant with Four Winds. Yudeste didn't make any movement, any acknowledgement of as each verdict was read. It wasn't until after the jury was dismissed and they stood up that Yudeste hugged his attorney for a moment. They patted each other on the back very lightly, and then Yudeste began hugging and talking to some of his family members who were sitting behind him in the courtroom.
And then he exited the and I guess he was questioned by reporters?
He was. First, the government actually came out and said and gave us a statement, which in some cases is really rare. They usually don't give a statement unless they win a case afterwards.
So these are the federal prosecutors?
These are the federal prosecutors. And so, you know, they were saying that Four Winds was a Ponzi scheme and that, you know, Yudeste was involved in it as well. It didn't look like Yudeste was going to say anything, but the media gaggle came up to him and he told us that he plans to appeal this. And he has no plans right now to step down from his Senate seat. Now, convicted felons cannot serve in the Texas legislature, but they can continue to retain their seat as long as they are appealing this process. So as of this morning, he doesn't have any plans to step down yet.
So, but it's still a question about how well he can serve in the capacity as someone who has been convicted on 11 counts of fraud charges. And that could be some pressure on him to step down because we don't know if he's going to be able to represent the area in a way that it needs to be represented.
Well, I mean, that's each person's that's the opinion for the public to decide. But he's not going to go for sentencing until June 25th. So he is out just like everybody else until that sentencing date.
And there's no other way for him to be forced to resign. It's all up to him.
As far as I understand, as long as he is appealing, he does not have to immediately step down.
All right. Joey Palacios, Texas Public Reporter, just back from the federal courthouse where Texas Senator Carlos Yudeste this morning was found guilty on all 11 counts in his federal fraud trial. Appreciate you coming in, Joey. So now we're going to move to our main topic this afternoon, which we're talking about San Antonio's transportation needs and our report card with transportation. We're joined by Molly Cox, the president and CEO of SA 2020. Shirley Gonzalez is here. She's the city council member for District 5. Jeff Arndt, president and CEO of Via Metropolitan Transit. And Linda Alvarado-Vela is the planning and public involvement program manager for the Alamo Area Metropolitan Planning Organization, AMPO. And it's great to have you here this afternoon. And I want to congratulate Molly Cox being named a favorite advocate by SA Magazine. And congratulations, Molly.
Thank you. You were on that list as well.
I was. It was part of, they named a source as a great venue for people to call in and talk about things that they're concerned about, you know, and the number to do that, if you want to call in and talk about transportation in San Antonio, is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. So Shirley Gonzalez, since you're on the city council, let's talk to you first. Where do you see us with our transportation situation?
Well, at least we're having lots of dialogue. We know that the mayor wants to see transportation alternatives, and we as a council are very supportive of that. I, for one, have been particularly supportive of public transit, walking and cycling, not just because it's more sustainable for the long term, but it creates a dynamic environment, and it helps with a lot of different aspects of society, so not just your overall health and wellness, but it's good for small business. And it connects people, and it's, I believe, the best way to commute in our city. So we need to improve those facilities as well, but Vision Zero is an initiative that I've been working on to reduce fatalities and hopefully eliminate fatalities in our roadways, and we can do that by investing in alternative transportations like via and public transit.
San Antonio traffic fatalities down 26% in 2017.
That's one of the first times we've trended in that direction. This year, we're off not to a good start, but we hope to continue the trend of a downward progression for fatalities. Every person on our streets is important, and so we've got to make decisions that will continue that downward trend.
But on the city council, Shirley Gonzalez, how do y'all see the transportation puzzle? Do y'all see as what needs to be done? I know these rapid corridors, we're going to talk a lot about these rapid corridors and what that means for San Antonio's development. But, you know, what's the mood like on the council? Is like, this is something that you realize we're at a critical juncture?
We are. And I think we've shown that by dedicating this year $4.8 million to VIA to improve transit in the area, increase frequency. So we know that we've got to look for alternatives in our city for transit, and I think we're making that a priority in investing in sidewalks, investing in complete streets, investing in VIA, and hopefully making single automobile travel less dominant.
Yeah, so when you say we're going to talk about sidewalks, but you know, people say we're talking about transportation, and then sidewalks comes up. People may think I'm worried about me and getting to work back and forth, you know, on my daily basis, and I don't have to spend more time in my car than I ought to. That's our number one concern.
Well, hopefully, we give alternatives for that. Of course, it has to be more beneficial for people to get out of their cars and consider another type of mobility. But we know that the millennials in particular don't want to spend a lot of time in their cars. They want to consider some other type of transportation, and we need to give them options.
So we need to stop thinking about transportation in ways of moving cars and start thinking about transportation in ways of moving people.
That's right. And I think that message is getting out.
All right, so we're going to take a break. We'll come back. Our phone lines will be open. We want to hear from you about what you want out of San Antonio's transportation future. Where are we? Where should we should be putting our resources? The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. We'll be talking about our report card for San Antonio transportation in the SA 2020 report. Also, we'll be hearing about the rapid corridor plan, and people are very enthused about what this might mean for San Antonio. It's not rail, it's something else. Give us a call, 210-614-8980. The Source continues after this. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. This is part four in our series talking about the SA 2020 report card for San Antonio. We've talked about certain issues. Today we're focusing on transportation. We've got one more coming up. We're going to be talking about civil engagement, and we're going to have the mayor with us, Mayor Ron Nuremberg, to join us on that program. That's going to be interesting. And so as we talk about transportation this afternoon, if you want to call in, the number is 210-614-8980. And let's get Jeff in on this. Jeff, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, David. Thanks for taking my call. I'm just going to suggest that if the municipal city county offices in San Antonio made it mandatory that all of the office workers for those groups rode on public transportation or participated in public transportation, it would go a great way towards improving quality and improving ridership. I think that sort of leadership would make an excellent panel in somebody's program if they were running for re-election or anything like that, and I'll hang up to take any responses. Thanks.
All right, Jeff, thank you for that. So Shirley Gonzalez from the City Council, mandatory. I always heard, don't legislate, motivate, you know?
Well, it's easy for me. I live very close to City Hall, and I frequently use public transit. I'm one of those choice riders. I often cycle or walk. In fact, I live where I do because it's two blocks from my job, and it takes me 8 minutes to cycle into City Hall, and so I would support electeds using alternatives, however, not mandating.
Yeah, maybe some incentives. And is that something that the VIA provides or can work with, Jeff Arndt?
Absolutely. In fact, the city and the county both are currently part of a program where their employees have their employee badge serves as a bus pass so that they are part of an overall employee program that we have that offers reduced fares for large numbers of employees when you buy for your entire workforce. So they've already provided an incentive for the employees at the city and the county to ride transit.
Okay, so let's talk about the report card for SA 2020, looking at transportation. Y'all are measuring five different categories, increased complete streets, decreased vehicle miles traveled, decreased commute times, increased alternative transit use, and eliminate traffic fatalities and serious injuries. And they're not going in the right direction, or they still need some time to talk about that, Molly Cox.
Yeah, I mean, I think thanks for sort of bringing those up. The challenge for us, right, in transportation is kind of exactly how you started this entire thing off, that we have to stop thinking about streets and sidewalks as streets and sidewalks and start thinking about them as means by which to keep our community safe, to connect people, to move them to their jobs and to schools, to get them home or to volunteer. And what are we doing in spaces like that to make that better, right? When we think about the vision statement under transportation that our community created, one of the things that is very evident in here is that our transportation system should be a space where everyone is able to walk, ride, drive, or wheel in a safe, convenient, an affordable manner. And at this point, what we see in transportation is we don't have that yet. And that's because it's so much bigger than just, do we have a public transit system and do we have the right sidewalks? It's all of those things in particular. Infrastructure basically wraps itself around the people who use it.
So the actual goal we have for the, you know, SA 2020, in 2020, San Antonio's transportation system is recognized as a model of efficiency and environmental sustainability. And we've still got a couple of years left before we have to hit that goal or not. But, you know, how are we doing on that actual goal?
So we measure it, as you mentioned, in those five categories. And of those five categories, three are either stagnant or moving in the wrong direction. And sort of to speak to Councilwoman Gonzalez, when she said about choice ridership, right? We know that if we could decrease the amount of people driving just by 1 mile, right, less per day, we would actually see a decrease in annual driving expenses of $453 million in the San Antonio MSA. So that's just decreasing by 1 mile, which means a decrease in commute time. It's a decrease in VMT. It's also an increase potentially in alternative transit use. And I think it's also in understanding systemically what we should be doing as a community, but also individually, how are we able to also participate?
Let me go back to the phone lines, and Roger is on the line. Roger, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. My idea has always been that since San Antonio has so many roads, it's a very old city. It has a road system sort of like a wagon wheel going off to all sections of the city. We should utilize some of these roads via, and going out to congested areas of town, for example, let's take to Bernie, have park and rides out there. The bus system would begin downtown. It could take, for example, maybe Fredericksburg Road or Bandera Road, one of these back roads that aren't so congested. It might have bus dedicated lanes so that the bus can easily move through these roads. When it comes to red lights, they have a system where the lights actually turn green upon these buses arriving. And, you know, they have parking rides in that area. And then, you know, from there, the people from those communities can, you know, drive their cars home.
All right, Roger, thank you so much. Roger's, he's got a lot of great ideas, you know.
Yeah, I'm going to hire Roger.
No, he's right. But you know what?
You just got a job by calling in.
You know, but a lot of the things he's saying is what you're doing.
Absolutely.
And I'm looking at this, you know, long-range planned system for increased rapid transit and around San Antonio. And it is kind of like what he's talking
Very
about.
Very much like that. The rapid transit corridors do focus on having roadways or pathways that are dedicated to transit. As he mentioned, you might have roadways that are, so that allows you to have better speed, better reliability, have faster service. We are not designating those corridors as being rail or bus rapid transit. That's all open for discussion, but we do have seven corridors that we've identified that we're moving forward in planning. And we do have park and rides associated with most of those corridors as well.
So are we at the stage now where we're talking about and giving a really hard look at having rail without the rail? These are buses that are basically going to be like a rail system.
That is a possibility. Bus rapid transit is a possibility that delivers the benefits of a rail system, typically at a lower cost.
A lower cost because you don't have to lay down the rail stuff.
Correct. Or buy rail vehicles or electrify the system. Number of reasons why a bus rapid transit line can be less expensive than a rail transit line.
And Linda Alvarado Vela over at the Alamo Area Metropolitan Planning Organization, y'all are part of this conversation as well.
We are, and I really want to commend the city because they've shown a lot of leadership here in the past several years, but even recently they've done things like bring workshops to our community with representatives from the National Association of City Transportation and Operations. You know, there's a different way to plan streets. There's a way to plan them for people. And part of that is making sure that we have that knowledge base within our engineering and planning community to do that. So they're bringing that knowledge base here. I think the other thing is if you look at some of the measures where we've done really well for SA 2020, it's those where you've seen a huge investment of time and or resources. And so the city chipping in with resources for VIA is a great step, but we need more resources. And I hate to say it, I feel like I'm always the bearer of the bad news. There's not enough funding to do everything that we need to do. We know where some of those problem areas are that we need to tackle. And getting additional funding for transportation is going to be something that needs to be talked about and needs to be part of the conversation.
So a lot of cities have gone through this evolution already. San Antonio has been through this also over the years in different ways. Typically, you have to wait for the pain point to get so intense that finally someone says, okay, we're going to go ahead and build that, you know, exchange way or whatever. And by the time you get there, it's so much more expensive and so many people have lost so much time. And it's so much smarter to like anticipate what we need and come up with the money now when it's cheaper and we know what we can do.
And there's different ways to go about it as well. When we look at reducing VMT, for example, something that needs to be part of the conversation is the cost of parking downtown. As long as it's economically feasible for me to drive from the suburbs, come into town, park my car, as long as that's still relatively inexpensive, then that's what I'm going to do. There's things that we can do from a policy standpoint that impacts the cost of transportation for the user and then starts to make other alternatives more attractive or even make decisions about where we live, right? So we all make a decision about where we choose to live and we can choose to live closer to where we work. So what do we need to do to support that? And that comes into the work that SAISD has been doing for several years now to improve the school systems in our inner cities so that people aren't afraid to live within 410 because they're worried that they're going to be sacrificing their child's education. And there's folks that are working on that. It takes time, it takes resources, and it's all part of this huge puzzle that is urban planning.
Let me go to another caller. This is Jacob. And hi, Jacob. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call today. I just want to say thank you to Councilman Shirley Gonzalez for promoting alternative means of transportation. And my question is, has the city explored the removal of the after dark ordinance on greenways as a way to promote people riding to work. Right now, that for me, that's an obstacle. And of course, more greenways on the northeast side, District 10, to get to and from work would be a great way to promote cycling.
All right, Jacob, thank you for that idea. And so, Councilman Shirley Gonzalez.
Oh, well, so Jacob, that's a great idea. And my husband also commutes by bicycle in the evening, and he uses our trail systems at night with a headlight. But the reason why they're not used more for transportation is because they need lighting. And San Antonio is finally making improvements in their lighting. We have a new initiative with CPS to improve our lighting system, offering LED lighting. And I hope that we can include that in our next budget cycle, is that we light the trailways. They're purposely kept dark for financial reasons, but also because I think there's a desire that they not get used at night for safety reasons. So I hope that we can see that change and investment in our trail system by improving lighting.
But we are building more linear parks. Yes, that's part of the plan. And so and some of them will be going through other parts of the central city, San Antonio. And I mean, maybe that would be something that could be considered as we move forward in that area, right?
And I would be very supportive of that initiative, that we improve lighting in our creekways and on our trail system.
And I would just add, because we have actually looked into this, part of the challenge is the funding source. So some of the federal funds that are used for some of our, particularly in the Mission Reach, have requirements that there not be lighting. Why those are in place, I have no idea. But these are some of the challenges that we need to overcome.
Okay, another caller, and this is Nora. And Nora, welcome to The Source. You're on the air, Nora.
Thank you for taking my call. I feel that there are areas where there's overbuilding, and they know that already the infrastructure is not there for cars and trucks and all. So what happens is that we have enormous amount of problems with transportation, or it takes longer to get to the next place. And that would be the City Planning Commission to work with the developers and other people.
All right, Nora, thank you for the call. And again, Councilmember Gonzalez.
That is part of our planning initiative. It's part of SA Tomorrow, that we focus attention on alternative transportation. I think that's really the only way we get more cars off the streets. We've got to invest in public transit, get more cars off the streets, so then there's not so much need for parking.
But you're saying, well, the building we're doing, and as a lot of people are still using certain roads to get to these same places, and it just puts more pressure on these arteries to get out to these locations, and the people who do the developers don't really have to worry about that, and so it becomes more and more congestion.
There's a couple of things that have to happen. We have to change the city form so that there's greater density and greater investment in public transit, so people don't have to worry about taking their vehicles everywhere. That's also part of SA Tomorrow. It's part of our planning process. We're doing that now as we go through our regional centers to determine what is the best use of the existing land and how we can develop it more efficiently in the future.
And to chime in on the centers concept, is not everyone needs to live downtown, but if we can create centers that are dispersed throughout the region where people can live, work, and play within those centers, that reduces the amount of miles that people are traveling, and that helps as well. But Texas is a property rights state, so...
So there's a conversation to be had. We can appeal to common sense and appeal to quality of life. People want to spend their time in their home with their family and not in their cars griping about traffic. Well, if you want to gripe about traffic, though, on the radio, you can. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. We're talking about the 2020 Impact Report Transportation. Stay tuned. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about transportation in San Antonio. We've got the SA 2020 Impact Report in front of us with their transportation highlights. And the highlights are actually kind of low lights because we're seeing things aren't going in the direction that we want. We're decreased vehicle miles traveled is not happening. Decreased commute times, that's not happening. Eliminate traffic fatalities and serious injuries. That's not happening. Why is that? What needs to be done? Where do we need to put our resources and our focus in order to improve our transportation in San Antonio? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. We know that from great cities that they're able to tackle these problems and get the results that they want, but it takes resources and it takes some wattage upstairs in order to figure out what needs to be done. And communication with the people. What do you want to see happen with your city? 210-614-8980. And we got a caller, and this is Axel, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, David. I'm really happy that we're talking about this issue because it is really pertinent to quality of life in San Antonio. And I think if we're going to attract, you know, more young professionals, especially, that we're going to need to think about that as a whole. But my question was in regards to lighting trails throughout the city. I'm so happy that the trails are there. And certainly the fact that they're not lit does mean that there's a limit, you know, not really, people don't really want to use it at night. But I was wondering if the guest that you have on air knows or has thought about the impacts on nature that lighting a series of trails, or impact on wildlife that lighting a series of trails can cause, and if they've considered lighting options that reduce light pollution as well as don't affect wildlife.
Okay, Axel, thank you for that. And so who would be a good person to take that topic?
Well, I think
Molly Cox.
I just want to take it up sort of kind of what he's bringing to light, right? Which is this idea that this interconnectivity of transportation and neighborhoods and environmental sustainability, and how these are all sort of intrinsically linked, whether we think about them as intrinsically linked every day or not. There's an intentionality behind, hey, we really want to be able to use trails. We need to light those trails. Are we considering the ramifications of lighting those trails in specific ways? And Councilman Gonzalez mentioned, you know, the expense of lighting trails as well.
And because a lot of these trails go along creeks.
Exactly. Yeah. So there's so much to it, right? This interconnectivity. So I appreciate sort of the space that Axel is bringing up, which is just not, hey, we're going to light. Why are we lighting? How is that impacting the environment itself? How is that impacting the trails that we've grown so accustomed to loving in our community? As we create more trails, are we thinking about those? And it lends itself to asking more intentionally as we're creating policies and coming up with resources, what is the ultimate why? Like, where are we going with these and why is it important to us?
There are cities in the United States, Minneapolis comes to mind, where they have bike highways. I mean, really great places to use your bikes to commute from. And, you know, they got snow. They've got real weather out there, and people are still riding their bikes to work and stuff. And it takes a mindset and someone to lead the way to show people that this can be done and it can improve the city in any number of ways. Shirley Gonzalez, a council member from District 3.
District 5.
District 5.
Sorry. I have traveled to a couple of conferences around the country, NACTO conference, Vision Zero conferences, some alternative transportation conferences, and the overwhelming desire of particularly millennials, right, young professionals, as a young man mentioned, what people are looking for is a progressive city, an affordable city, and walkable city. So I think as San Antonio, we have all those, and I believe we have all those in District 5. So we just need to build on our strengths. They exist already, but we need to improve some of our transportation options. We have a grid network here, especially in the urban areas, and we're still affordable in lots of parts of right outside downtown. So we have still great potential to improve on what's our existing framework, and I look forward to doing that. And I think we have the council and the support to continue on that lens.
Okay.
I'd like to
Jeffrey
pick up
Orange
on what,
from VIA.
Pick up on what Molly said and actually what Linda said earlier. If you view the transportation system as not a series of separated, you know, you have the highway system, you have the roadway system, you have the sidewalks, you have the transit system. If you view it as an integrated ecostructure, right? And you start thinking in terms of what can we do within that structure to encourage certain, as you say, not require it, not bank, but incentivize certain things or de-incentivize other things. And that's what I really love where the city has been going and really providing a lot of leadership is taking a look and saying, okay, we know that one of the reasons people don't ride transit is because the bus runs once an hour, so we're going to help you provide service that would be more attractive, right? So What I look at, when I look at these indicators, I look at them as a challenge. Mm-hmm. It's a challenge. We spent a lot of time and effort in some of these other areas and gotten funding in some of those other areas. The fact that there's a lot of conversation right now around these things is really, I think, a positive reflection that we know we still need to move these lines, if you will, but we also know that we have to invest in order to do that.
Absolutely. And just to give an idea of that, you know, the Texas Department of Transportation is doing safety performance measures, and they have a very low target of 2%, or what might sound like a low target of 2%. But just to reach that 2% target, they're adding another $650 million to their safety budget. So you can't just set the target without thinking about the resources, but the targets are important because if we don't have a target, then we're never going to work towards it.
Okay, but more calls here, a lot of calls, and Brian has called in. Brian, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello. I just wanted to make a comment about how to improve transportation around San Antonio as a whole, maybe focus on educating the public about how traffic signals work, about how speeding affects traffic in general, just basically making sure people are driving correctly to kind of decrease congestion and increase safety. I'll take my answer.
What do you mean? They don't know how traffic signals work. I mean,
well, so like some people think that when you arrive at a traffic signal that once you get there, it should turn green immediately. But a lot of people don't understand that when you arrive at a traffic signal, it measures which road you're trying to get onto, whether it's a highway or an arterial street or just a, you know, another road. Some people don't understand that there are cues and that the signals are programmed to allow traffic to flow onto larger streets, and that causes a lot of people to just kind of dodge traffic intersections, so that they can kind of use cut-through streets.
Yeah, I see what you're saying now. That makes a lot of sense. So, yeah, if people understood what that traffic, that there's a lot going on. It's not just a light that's arbitrarily turning red, green, blue whenever it feels like it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's these kinds of conversations that allow us to sort of talk more specifically than just outputs. How many streets did we lay down? How many buses are on the street? How many sidewalks are completed? When we just start counting things, we stop thinking about the shifts that we could potentially have in learning and action and conditions, right? So what you're hearing there is, hey, do all of the, how many times does my stoplight turn green when I show up to it, as opposed to, do I understand why the stoplight turned green? Am I taking an alternative route? Perhaps I need to try a different space, which is a very different conversation. It's this idea of complexity that is around transportation.
But there are some stoplights that do have sensors, are able to detect, and they're making, you know, there's some sort of algorithm out there, right?
And there's cities, and the city's already investing in additional technology that's going to improve that. So technology's out there now to where you can time, a computer algorithm does the whole thing, and it could add seconds to lights just so that the entire system works more efficiently. However, you can imagine that would involve changing out all the traffic signals all across the city, all across the region. So the city has started some of that process along key corridors, and they have, they're buying technology to do that. But it's going to be, again, I hate to always be the person who talks about funding, but that's great, expensive technology, and we want it, and we're working towards it.
I think I talked about funding, too, just to take it. You know,
okay.
So I will tell you that the traffic signal system along Fred Road, for example, has, as part of that system, the ability for the buses on the Primo routes to influence the amount of green time along that road. So if the bus is arriving and the light is green within limits, it'll stay green longer than it normally would, or if it's red, it will turn green faster. Has to recover, obviously, but that capability is along that corridor, for example.
And we were just briefed on it yesterday in the Comprehensive Planning Committee, so it is something in education that we're always having.
All right, another caller, Bonnie. Bonnie, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to ask about adjacent areas such as Windcrest or Alamo Heights cooperating with any transportation plans.
Okay, that's something that we would see with the MPO, right?
Absolutely. So we cover a four-county area that includes all of Bexar County, Comal, Guadalupe, and a portion of Kendall. So we and our transportation policy board includes representatives from all those various agencies. And in fact, we currently have 48 transportation projects that are competing for federal funding. So if you're interested in weighing in, you can access those at www.alamoareampo.org/your move, because this really is your opportunity to have a say in which projects get funded throughout our region.
When you have a community like Leon Valley, they're worried about what's going to happen to them.
Bandera Road, we were just talking about that.
You know, and they want to find transportation solutions that work in Congress with the entirety of San Antonio and all the other municipalities that we have, so that they don't find themselves, you know, overlooked.
Absolutely. And we are that agency that helps those conversations take place. Mayor Riley's on our Transportation Policy Board, and she actually represents all of those suburban cities. She was at our public meeting last night, and the last thing she told me is, Linda, I have to get back and let all my other city mayors know what's going on. So she is that conduit of information, and we have several projects that they've submitted that are being considered right now for funding.
All right, we're going to take a break. Let me read a couple of emails here. Please discuss the difficulties and opportunities of working with state and federal agencies to incorporate safe cycling routes in San Antonio. We'll hit on that when we come back. Also from Amber on Facebook, many people prefer to drive their own vehicles to work because they can leave from the house when they want to and go home when they want to. Public transportation isn't a time saver at all, she says. People like that flexibility. So we'll talk about that too. And also, the phone lines are open. 210-614-8980. The Source continues when we come back. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. The SA 2020 transportation goal for San Antonio becoming a transportation system recognized as a model of efficiency and environmental sustainability. We still got some time, and we've still got a lot of ways to go before we can hit that, and you can make it. With everyone's help in San Antonio, give us a call. Where do you think we ought to be putting our efforts? 210-614-8980. So when we went to break, we were talking about the flexibility issue. People that are reluctant to get on public transportation. They don't want to give up their car because you never know when you're going to get a call from the school and you got to pick up your kid or all these different things. And so Jeffrey Arndt with VIA, you know, that's what they like.
Absolutely. And that's why I say about VIA, what you see is not what you will get. What you see today is a system.
I see
that
you kind of flipped the Flip Wilson line.
I do a little bit, don't I? So what you see right now is a system that's been built on a 1/2 cent sales tax. We've spoken many times over how cities like Dallas and Houston have accumulated $5 billion more sales tax over the last 20 years to invest in transit. So you have a 1/2 cent system, and it will serve a large area, but very infrequently. And so the city's investment in more frequent corridors is the first step. The rapid transit corridors, high-frequency service, high-speed service, limited stop service, those kinds of services are the ones that do attract people out of their car because it's very flexible, it's very fast, and so the system that we are talking about building in the future looks entirely different, and the user experience would be entirely different than what we have today, because I certainly respect and understand the perspective that, again, if I know that it'll be an hour until my next bus comes and I need to pick my child up at school, I can understand why someone says that's not an attractive option. What we're trying to do is build a system that is in fact, an attractive option.
Okay, and the other email we got from Peter about discussing opportunities of working with federal and state agencies to incorporate safe cycling routes in San Antonio. Who would want to try to address that?
I'll start just with part
Shirley,
of it.
So Shirley Gonzalez, District 5.
We are investing in complete streets over. $450 million was invested in streets in the bond program, the $850 million bond program that we just passed. And a large percentage of that is going to complete streets. So once we have all of those streets implemented, then we'll have a lot more connectivity, a lot more complete streets. The city is very ambitious in adding more bike lanes, but primarily it's at the local level. Now, the state does fund some other projects as well, but a lot of it we funded in our own bond program.
Okay.
Sure, and I think the challenge with state and federal agencies is we've long held this idea that you can provide a wider outside lane and that will serve a bicycle. But what we know is that 51% of our community is interested in cycling, but they're concerned about their safety. So if you want to get 51% people out there cycling, what you need to do is provide a protected bicycle lane. And so we're hoping to work towards that. We're not there yet, but that's what we need to build a system where more people will get out, where people will say, hey, I'm going to take my family and we're going to go down the street to the restaurant to go eat and let's ride our bikes. Because who wouldn't want to ride the bikes with their kids to go do that? But it's they just don't feel safe doing it today.
A protected lane would look like what?
A protected lane would look like we have one, we have a few here, but it could be a curb system that separates the vehicles that are traveling from the actual bicycle lane. So it's a some kind of raised element that provides a barrier between you and the flowing traffic.
Okay, so also we have a sidewalk gap in San Antonio. Shirley Gonzalez, can you talk about that?
We addressed sidewalk gaps yesterday in one of our committee meetings. And so I want to say that the number that they presented to us, that the city presented to us, staff presented, was about $800 million is the funding gap. And historically, the city has not funded sidewalks. So we are just now starting to make a dent in that. The council, I think, needs to make a decision, a policy decision, as whether or not we want to have that included in our IMP, our infrastructure management program.
So the sidewalks we have now are basically, where'd they come from if the city didn't put them there?
They were part of the development of the city. Usually developers included them in neighborhoods, but neighborhoods that were built before the 1950s did not have a standard for sidewalks. So we should go, my opinion is that we should go in and fill in the gaps first in the areas that never had them, and then we can fill in the gaps and with other policy recommendations about what the priorities are. But putting them first in areas that didn't have them, also first prioritizing areas where we've had a lot of fatalities, should be part of that. And just having enough funding, as has been mentioned many times, we have not previously funded sidewalks, not until 2007. So we're just starting to fill in those gaps.
And Molly Cox?
Yeah, what you're hearing here, right, is kind of, you've heard it from all three of the people specifically working in transportation, this idea of finite resources and infinite need, right? You just heard $800 million to fill in sidewalk gaps. And I think what you also just heard, particularly from Councilwoman Gonzalez, but even from callers and from the rest of the panel today, is we have got to figure out how we are prioritizing some of these spaces, right? The idea that we are not looking at areas that are flooding more or who have never historically had sidewalks or where are fatalities happening, those should be our very first priority. If we're serious about making walkable neighborhoods and reaching the goals that we set for ourselves for the year 2020, are we thinking about the collective well-being of the areas that need resources right now? And I think that comes back to understanding that we have a yes and conversation going right now. Mm-hmm. The choice riders and the need riders, the people who want to use mass transit and the people who need it just to get to work every day? And are we ultimately prioritizing the areas that need our help?
But Molly, we've had you on four times talking yes. about all the different needs that we have in San Antonio.
Yep.
Education is one that comes to mind immediately. And we got to figure out, you know, like we said, we don't have a giant magic pot of money that refills itself every couple of seconds.
We don't, but we also have to be concerned with what the city is ultimately responsible for, right? So if we start to think about transit as being sort of disconnected from education, we're missing the bigger picture. If you don't have sidewalks to get to school, it's harder to get to school. If we don't have transit options to get to work, it's harder to get to work.
If we don't have sidewalks to get to the bus, it's harder to get to the bus.
Right.
And then aging in place also. If we
yes.
have sidewalks that don't have bumps and cracks
yes.
and roots sticking out, then it's so much
yes.
nicer and easier to walk around. All right. Elise has called in. Hey, Elise. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey there. I have two items I wanted to bring up. So I like to go downtown at night, and on the weekends, there's not much late night transportation options. So is there any way to expand the VIA system to go late night? Because if you're going to go dance at a club, you're not going to be leaving before the bus closes. I mean, you're going to take your car. It might help save, like, parking needs, and it might actually help in drunk driver fatalities if they could have more encouragement of VIA for late night. The other item I have, too, is on Highway Natty, kind of near 410 on the west side of town, they actually built a fence that stops pedestrians from crossing on the highway, which actually doesn't solve the problem. People still need to get from one side to the other. So people climb the fence, they break the fence down. Is there any way to get like a pedestrian bridge to go across Highway 90 instead of making it harder to get across and walk? Okay, that's it.
All right. Thank you, Elise. Thank you for that. And who wants to go first? Well, with a party with, bus.
I'll start with the party bus. First of all, I think it's a very commendable perspective that if you're going to go to the clubs, that you not drive your car, mm-hmm. right? The very commendable perspective. And so, again, it's a matter of funding. Running the service later at night requires more money. And so we have to weigh those things. Again, our long-range plan conceives a, quote, better bus system that does operate over a broader period of time. So we recognize the need. We recognize the value. We just need to find the cash.
But, you know, there are Uber and other things, rideshare that you can, you know,
yes.
call. And
yes, absolutely.
Definitely do not drive drunk, please.
Yeah.
There are options.
Okay. And then so and the other concern that the caller had about trying to get across some of these barriers, you know, it's we put up obstacles for pedestrians to get from point A to point B.
I think about the bridge, and we have some in a couple of different locations around the city. They're really not good options. It's very difficult to physically climb them, so even if we have access for wheelchairs, they're not used very well. So we have to find a different option, and that really goes back to land use, mm-hmm. how we design our city and putting highways in what was originally a neighborhood is going to lead to fatalities. It's going to lead to people crossing streets. So we really need to consider city form as we continue planning our city.
Yeah, because you see those pedestrian bridges over the highway that do, it's like three flights of stairs to get up there. And people say, I'd rather just take my chances and run across the highway. You know, people do that. And I see it all the time, and it's those are bad choices. So we have to figure out it's the overall construction of the city.
I think it's city form, and so yeah, we know that those pedestrian bridges are not used often, and they're not in real strategic locations either. So we have to find something else.
Yeah. So in our last minutes, I want to go back to Jeff Arndt, and President and CEO of Via Metropolitan Transit, and tell me where are we on this rapid. Transit system, you know, in this conversation and making decisions?
So we will be going to our board this summer with a long-range plan that specifies the corridors and develops a phasing plan for that, and then, of course, a financing plan, which will be the big challenge.
So I see a Vision 20 long-range plan. Is Vision 20. Vision 40.
Vision 2040.
And so what is that, a deadline?
Yeah, the idea was, in 2040, we would like to see a system like that.
Sure.
And so the conversation now is like, who wants a stop? Who wants a station? Or what's happening?
No, the conversation right now is where would these corridors be? What would be in the corridors? But the biggest conversation ultimately becomes how do we afford them?
Yes.
Because as I said, we're a half-cent system. And as I often say, our 1/2 cent has been spent.
Yeah, but we're maxed out on our sales tax.
Well, and to plug for the city and VIA, they both have projects that are competing for that $150 million worth of funding to look at those corridors. So if you're interested in seeing these projects, let us know.
Okay, all right. We'll be having more conversations about transportation. The phone lines have been full, a lot of emails, a lot of communication. This is something it's not going to go away. I want to thank all of our guests this afternoon for joining us. We've been joined by Molly Cox, President and CEO of SA 2020, Shirley Gonzalez, San Antonio City Council member for District 5, Jeff Arndt, President and CEO of Via Metropolitan Transit, Linda Alvarado-Vela, she is the Planning and Public Involvement Program Manager for the Alamo Area Metropolitan Planning Organization. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning us in.